time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETF.
I ran the numbers again for the cheapest ESG ETF portfolio. These are good numbers. They're not marijuana good, but they're pretty good. If you believe that it's going to save you in the apocalypse, you might want to consider something else.
Laura, so we're going to discuss an area of ETFs that probably doesn't get a whole lot of attention, which is grain and agriculture ETFs. You have an excellent piece out right now on ETF.com. It's titled Floods and Tariffs Lift Grain ETFs. I highly recommend everyone check that out. But basically, this combination of the trade war, along with the weather in my neck of the woods, all the rain we've had in the Midwest, this is having a real impact on supply and demand for things like corn and soybean and wheat. And so because of that, we've seen some related ETFs start to take off. I guess first, give us the backdrop here. How exactly is the trade war and weather impacting grains?
Sure. So really, this is a story about weather and first and foremost, right? So corn and wheat prices are surging because farmers are super behind on their plantings this year. I took a look at the USDA's most recent weekly crop progress report, which is a lot of fun to read through, a lot of fun light reading there. And farmers had planted more than half their crop after May 25th, according to that report. That is super late. For the past 25 years, less than 20% of the crop has been planted that late. So farmers are really way behind on their plantings this year, and that's because of massive rainfall and flooding we've had throughout the agricultural state. From Indiana down to Arkansas, it's just one big puddle. And
yeah.
Farmers...
Well, I was going to say, just to give people an idea, so I'm here in the Kansas City area. In May, we had the most rain in the 131 years they've tracked the data. So we had 13 inches of rain, and actually that was the third wettest month ever. And then so far in June, we've had more rain. You know, we're just not set up to handle that. So, yeah, the rain has been a real issue.
Right, exactly. And it's the story in Kansas City. It's the story in Little Rock. It's the story, you know, up in Indiana as well. It's everywhere. There are flooded rivers. There's rain-drenched fields. There's levee breaches. There's rivers that are so high that barges can't get through. The entire supply chain is struggling with weather right now, and unless something changes fast, 2019 is probably going to be one of the worst crops on record. Combine that whole flooded out picture with what's going on in the South, in states like Georgia and South Carolina, where there's extreme heat, there's drought conditions. And so that's baking these fields before the seeds can ever really germinate, and that's causing its own issues. So U.S. picture is really bad. On top of that, there's the trade war going on. So China, which is typically, historically, one of our largest, if not our largest, buyer of soybeans, they just stopped. They just flat out stopped buying our soybeans. And the reason is because of this ongoing tariff nonsense. And that is just killing farmers, especially here in my home state of Louisiana. Not only is there less crop going into the ground, but there's nobody to buy it when it comes up. So the Trump administration's having to bail out farmers to the tune of $16 billion. That's, you know, funded by tariff proceeds. But it's a bad, bad situation right now.
All right. So because of all this, corn and wheat in particular have really started taking off recently. And in your ETF.com piece, you noted five of the top 10 best performing ETFs over the past 30 days or so have been agriculture related exchange traded products. Give us a quick rundown here. What are some of the ETPs that have done well?
Yeah, actually, the top three in a row were all grains ETFs, ETNs and ETPs. So the best performer was the Element MLCX Grains Index Total Return ETN, ticker GRU. GRU, that's quite a mouthful. A lot of these have very long names here, so I apologize in advance. GRU rose 17% over the past month, and that was followed by the Tucrium Wheat Fund, which is ticker WEAT, or wheat, and that rose 16%. And then the third highest best performer was the IPATH Series B Bloomberg Grains Sub-Index Total Return ETN. ticker JJG, and that rose 14%. So GRU and JJG are both diversified green ETNs. GRU tracks an index of the four front-month futures contracts, while JJG tracks contracts across many expiration dates. And GRU tracks soybean oil, in addition to the big three, which are corn, soy, and wheat. JJG just tracks the big three. Wheat, by the way, is just a pure play wheat fund.
Laura, you mentioned futures, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but out of the products you just listed, there are futures-based products. There are also ETNs, exchange-traded notes. Do you mind just very briefly explaining the major differences here and maybe how they compare to more plain vanilla ETFs for investors looking at this space?
Oh, sure, yeah. So the two main ways to access commodities are through the futures-based ETFs and ETNs, like you said. So futures-based ETFs, like it says on the tin, they hold commodity futures contracts, either of a single commodity or multiple ones, or a single expiration date or multiple ones. And an ETF that holds futures contracts is always going to have some cost of buying those contracts baked in. And that's going to maybe cause a little bit of drift away from the index that they're tracking. The counterpoint to that, I guess, is the ETN, which doesn't hold anything. That's just a debt instrument issued by a bank that's tied to the performance of a single index. So there shouldn't be any tracking error or minimal tracking error in ETNs because they're not buying and selling anything. But ETNs also have issuer risk, and that's, you know, the chance that the bank that issues them might default. It's rare, but it has happened in the past. It's something that you always should think about when you're talking about ETNs. The other big difference about ETFs that hold futures contracts is that they are going to issue a special kind of tax form called the K-1, which, if you're not familiar with it, can be kind of a pain in the patushka to deal with. Some broad commodity funds now are being structured so that they specifically avoid the K-1 form. But, you know, ETNs, they don't have a K-1 form. There are some tax benefits to a futures-based ETF, but those are, like, way deep in the weeds, and we're not going to bore your listeners.
Yeah, topic for another show. Laura, going back to performance, we should point out the strong performance that you highlighted has been more recent. A lot of these funds were actually bludgeoned prior to May. I just want to point that out because I think it highlights the nature of these products as well, right? These are probably going to be more for trading or hedging, not necessarily longer-term investing.
Exactly. Commodities, as a general rule, whether you're talking about grains or oil or whatever, it's a super volatile asset class. There's no consistent supply and demand story from year to year or even month to month. And there's no consistent supply and demand story between the various commodities even. You can't just lump soybeans in with gold and expect them to perform the same way. So these grains ETPs and really any commodity fund, they've got very complicated fundamentals and they tend to vary in performance. Like you said, on short time scales. The other thing is cost, right? You can't talk about these sorts of ETPs without talking about the cost of them because they're more expensive than maybe some investors are used to. The average expense ratio for a commodity ETP is 122 basis points. That's huge. And it actually goes even higher than that for some of the Tucrium pure play grains funds like the corn fund and wheat and so on. If you're a short-term trader, that doesn't matter to you as much because you're not going to be holding it for as long, for that annual expense ratio to, you know, eat as much of your return. But for a long-term buy and hold investor, I mean, for the love of God, don't buy an ETF that has three 300 basis points expense ratio and hold it forever. You know, you're going to get killed in fees.
What about something like the Invesco DB Agriculture Fund, ticker DBA? This is more of a broad play on the space, and this is actually by far the most popular ETP in agriculture. Any thoughts on that product?
Yeah, I think that DBA is kind of an interesting fund. You know, when you're you're looking at commodities, ETPs, you really have to consider the cost of holding the underlying futures contracts as much as you can. You know, DBA, it does, see how I want to say this. It's a fund that thinks intelligently about something called roll cost, which is, if I had to sum it up, it's the cost to maintain a constant commodity futures exposure. And it's by selling one expiring futures contract and buying another up. So roll cost is kind of an obsession with commodities investors, as well it should be, because roll costs can kind of kill your return if you end up buying high and selling low. VBA takes a smart approach to the roll strategy by spreading its exposure across a variety of expiration dates to kind of minimize these roll costs. But it also, you know, kind of goes back to what I was saying before. It has a higher expense ratio at 89 basis points. So you could use JJG, which is the ETN that I was talking about earlier, the iPath one, that has a roll strategy that is also designed, or the index, I should say, has a roll strategy designed to minimize roll costs. It's, you know, also part of these new wave of iPath ETNs that are much more investor friendly. They have a call feature, they're cheaper, and so on and so forth. So it's really up to you.
All right. I have to point out, if you want to avoid futures contracts or ETNs, there is another option, which is the VanEck Vectors Agribusiness ETF. And I point this out because this has one of my favorite ticker symbols of all time, MOO, M-O-O. But this owns the stocks of companies involved in agriculture. And if you look at performance, this thing has actually outperformed everything else we've talked about today since the beginning of the year, though it's significantly underperformed over the past month because it owns equities. Any thoughts on this one?
Absolutely. Commodity equity ETFs like MOO, just in general, they're not the same as investing in a commodity ETF. They have different returns. They have different drivers behind them. And if you think about it, it makes sense that a commodities equity fund, a fund of producers and growers, is always going to lag wherever the prices of those underlying commodities are going to go. They're always going to be a little step behind. And so in the case of MOO right now, that's a good thing, right? MOO is up 11% year to date. Compare that to DBA, which is down 2%. So yay for MOO. That's great for them. The broader stock market has a large impact on commodity equity ETFs that I think gets overlooked. So, you know, you're not just looking at what the underlying commodity the impact isn't just from the underlying commodity prices. It's also from what's happening in the stock market. And the stock market's doing, you know, not so bad right now. So I'd be willing to bet that the reason MOO is up, whereas the underlying commodity prices are down, is because, you know, they're not quite as exposed on a, how do I want to say it? It's the rise in grain prices are probably helping buoy the producers in MOO, and also the stock market is helping, just general equity upward trend, compared to DBA, which kind of spreads its exposure across these many contracts. It's all very complicated. This is all so complicated, Nate. Another reason why I don't necessarily believe that these products are always appropriate for just average retail day-to-day investors.
No, completely agree. Again, as we said previously, I think these are trading or hedging tools, or at best a small satellite position in a well-diversified portfolio. Laura, we only have about 2 minutes left. Just bigger picture here, with agricultural commodities rising recently, do you think this is sort of a longer-term inflationary signal that perhaps we should keep an eye on, or do you think it's more of a short-term blip? And look, I always say, we are not here to make market calls, but the fact is rising corn and rising wheat prices, that can show up in food prices, that can have an impact on people's pocketbooks. Do you think that's a concern at all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's going to continue to be a concern, right? So one of the reasons I like following these ETFs is that I feel like they're a canary in a coal mine, right? They're a canary in the coal mine for inflation. they're also a canary in the coal mine for climate change, too. I mean, we can't forget, we can't set aside that the reason these grain prices are rising is because of record flooding. And we're talking flooding, like you said earlier, in Kansas City, flooding at the levels that we have never seen before. So in the short term, ag prices are going to rise, they're going to fall, whatever. But realistically, on the longer scale, we're going to see these continue to rise and rise and rise and rise. And the reason is because it's going to get harder and harder to grow things in a world that's always too wet and too hot for them to grow. So, and I know that sounds very apocalyptic and dire, but it's just realism. So these are definitely, you know, maybe not investments for everybody, but it's certainly investments that everybody should keep an eye on for the future.
Well, Laura, that's a perfect place to end because we're actually going to talk ESG in our next segment and talk about the environment. Always appreciate your time. I've got to say, your ability to cover every nook and cranny of the ETF space never ceases to amaze me. Excellent job on grains this week. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was ETF.com's Laura Krieger.